Welcome to the More Perfect Union, the podcast that offers real debate without the hate. I'm Kevin Kelton, a moderate Democrat, and joining me are...
DJ McGuire, a conservative Democrat from Suffolk, Virginia.
Greg Matuszak, a common sense liberal who is probably also not getting a raise from Cincinnati, Ohio. And when I say a raise, I mean a raise for doing this podcast.
You're not a federal worker doing this podcast.
I don't get paid this much for this podcast anyways, but
I'm Rebecca Kushmiter, and I'm a progressive feminist from Kensington, Maryland, and I can't come up with a funny joke to respond to Greg. I feel like I'm falling down on the job here, which maybe that's why I'm not getting a raise either.
You have another 55 minutes. Don't worry about it. So we're doing our three-day weekend Labor Day extravaganza show. Before we get into the headlines of the week, we want to talk about the articles that we've been publishing on our website, moreperfectunionpodcast.com. Rebecca, you did a very interesting Pop Goes the Political Culture column this week. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I bitched about how long summer vacation is and how the school calendar is antagonistic to the needs of working families. I talked about why everybody who's ever changed their name needs to get their paperwork in order because immigration authorities are fascists. And yeah, that's about it.
And DJ, you wrote an article that I thought was very interesting about conservatives and their desire to see the Supreme Court move to the right at all costs and why that might be some quicksand. You want to talk a little bit more detail about that?
Yeah. When you talk to a bunch of Republicans, and frankly, I do it so that none of you have to, their main argument for standing by Donald Trump is the judges. We're going to get so many great judges, and they're going to issue great conservative rulings for years and decades. And I just, you know, went through history and tried to show them how either those judges or justices ended up changing their minds on issues, or how conservatives in general changed their minds on what issues were important to them, so that no matter who appointed the judges or justices, usually conservatives felt, quote, betrayed, unquote, because either the judges changed their mind or those conservatives changed their mind. And there's no reason to believe that won't happen again in the 2020s and the 2030s and the 2040s. And that essentially this desire to just accept every other, all the damage that Trump is doing for the judges is just a Faustian bargain.
Yep. And there's also a few articles about the passing of John McCain. I know I wrote one about how his passing and his legend is going to be historic for reasons that you don't normally hear on the network news. DJ, you offered a view on it. So a lot of good reading there on the website if people want to go take a look at it. But let's get to the stuff
Wait, not so fast, Kevin. You forgot the fact that you were featured on a podcast. Not this one.
Another podcast,
because you're a big podcast star now.
That's right.
I think we should talk about that just for a moment and view, you know, send some of our listeners there too.
Well, you know, when you become a star, people want you to do a guest role on their show.
So you were on Law and Order playing the bad guy?
Yes, exactly.
He was on Law and Order playing the corpse. They kept saying, look more bloated, look more bloated.
But I did not play a corpse in a podcast. I actually talked about my SNL years in a podcast that's entitled That's the Week at SNL or something like that. I can't remember exactly. But I will put the link on our site, moreperfectunionpodcast.com, in the body of the description for this episode. So you can find it there if you'd like to hear me talking about my SNL years and some of my other writing stuff. Boy, you'll get more Kevin Kelton than you ever bargained for.
I just got the link, and I'm super excited to listen to it. That's what I'm going to listen to on the way into work tomorrow, because I never get tired of your Kevin Kelton stories. And even when I'm just talking about something ridiculous, you're like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm just going to drop this. Watch out for all the names I'm going to drop, because you're going to trip. And they're awesome. There's a lot of them in there. They're always awesome.
Well, back to the news of the week and politics. And boy, Donald Trump. He wants to make America great. He wants to make everybody rich. The only people he doesn't want to help are federal employees. He reversed a built-in pay raise that I think had been slated since the Obama administration, And he just simply reversed that this week. And federal workers, if you voted for Donald Trump, he may be making America great again, but he's not doing much for your paycheck and your wallet.
Well, and the thing is, this isn't money that can be reallocated. This was already in the budget. It was a line item. He's just not going to spend it. It's going to sit there in the Treasury. It's not going to do anyone any good. And, if we were talking about this like it was a business, instead of giving employees a previously agreed upon raise, he went and gave people who don't work there, who don't need any extra money, a bonus in the form of a tax cut. It's like he has no sense of loyalty to the people who are actually making America function.
I have someone very close to me who's a federal worker, and we've been talking about this for a little while. And the review process for federal workers has been under review, and it's difficult. And they have not really done well. So it's like teachers, the review process for teachers. How do you gauge how well a teacher does? Well, it's the same with federal workers. And about 2 years ago, they restructured the whole thing. They did this whole review and they found that a lot of the administrators, that's all they were doing, were these review, and they scrapped the whole system and they said, let's just go back and let's just do this, these whole systems again. And because of that, Trump says, they might not even be doing that good of a job. Who knows? But the problem. And then his other explanation is, I can do this as president because of our, woeful economic, and we're in this crisis. But at the same time, he's saying we are in the best economic times ever. So it's just double talk BS.
But like teachers, they are a convenient punching bag for budget hawks.
Yes.
Yeah, I have two things to just throw in on this. One, the Senate in their budget plan actually includes a 1.9% raise for federal employees. If they can get the House to go along, it doesn't matter what Trump wants. The other thing is, again, this is just another example that Trump doesn't know what the hell is going on with the government that he supposedly runs, in that he does what a lot of folks on the right try to do, which is to try to separate the civilian workforce from the military workforce, because rank and file military are getting a 2.6% increase from the different appropriation and authorization. The problem is that does not take into account the DoD civilian force, which is a very vital and important part of the Department of Defense. So while Donald Trump thinks he has managed to separate the Department of Defense from the rest of the federal government in this political move of his, all he has really done is he separated the military rank and file. There are a whole lot of DoD civilians who are still angry at him because he doesn't actually understand how government works.
And the other thing that Donald Trump has separated is Canada from Mexico from us in the form of a trade deal. And DJ, I know that you're really not opinionated on this particular issue.
As Kevin brings this up, all of us are rubbing our faces in this sort of bewildered agony. Like, if you could see us, we look like a migraine commercial.
There you go.
Hey, so this is what I'd like to do on this particular topic this week. Listen, we can all sit here and lambaste the Trump administration for their bad trade policy. But as I sat and thought about it this week, I was doing a lot of driving this week, and I was thinking about it and listening to the news on the radio, and it occurred to me that I never really understood what was in NAFTA to begin with. I never understood what was in TPP that was supposedly so dreadfully awful. But I have a feeling there might be a lot of people like me who know, something like NAFTA bad, free trade good, but we don't really understand what it is that's being debated. So, DJ, could you make us any smarter?
I can try. What makes them go more smoothly is lower tariffs, fewer regulations that get...
So there are tariffs written into these laws?
There are tariff reductions written into the laws. And that we say we all agree to reduce our barriers, our trade barriers by X amount. There are also rules for what happens if a country violates the agreement. There's an adjudication process that examines and says, okay, the United States is imposing a tariff that is too high. They're imposing a trade barrier that is not acceptable, et cetera, et cetera. The problem is you mentioned the fact that people just assume NAFTA is a bad deal. I do not assume NAFTA is a bad deal, and most economists do not assume NAFTA is a bad deal. Donald Trump assumes NAFTA is a bad deal because he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, Bernie Sanders also felt it was a bad deal.
Yeah, he doesn't know what he's talking about either. And I've been bashing Bernie Sanders for 30 years, so it's not. Yeah. It's over.
I remember in the 90s, the concern about NAFTA, the concern was that by making it easier to source components out of Mexico or Canada, that was going to increase manufacturing in those countries. And make it a net loss of jobs in our country. That was the concern in the 90s. Did that come to pass, or was that fear-mongering on the part of American manufacturing?
That did not come to pass. American manufacturing certainly was not badly crippled. There were certain particular industries in the United States that had trouble because they could not compete with Mexico or Canada. That did not mean that American manufacturing as a whole suffered. But the fact of the matter is, what we are talking about is recognizing that, yes, Mexico and Canada can make certain things more efficiently than we can, while they recognize that we can make some things more efficiently than they can, and that it is better to have one trinational economy taking advantage of these efficiencies so that people in the home countries can save money and reduce their costs, which means they have more money to either buy other things and advance the economy forward, or save money and invest so that it can advance the economic capacity of their individual countries. It is looking at the larger picture and saying, yes, even if that industry gets hurt, other industries will take advantage. And more to the point, greater prosperity for the consumers and firms of the home country is a greater benefit in the long run.
Let me put it in a way that I think a lot of people may understand a little clearer. You've got three countries that are neighbors: United States, Mexico, Canada. It's like looking at Tennessee that is bordered by Kentucky on the north and, let's say, Mississippi on the south. If the people of Tennessee were to take the attitude of, like, you know, we have to do everything to keep jobs in Tennessee, and oh my God, if we do anything that allows jobs to grow in Kentucky or Mississippi, it's hurting us. That's not the way the United States works. The United States works as a federation of 50 states. Well, North America should work the same way. It shouldn't be a zero-sum game where one country has to take down the other two in order for its economy to be stronger. A rising tide should lift all three boats. Does that make sense, DJ?
No, that's excellent, Kevin. That is exactly the way it should be.
That's exactly it. And you see it all over the world. There's the Mercosur countries in South America. There's the Eurozone. There's the TPP countries. This is a common idea where countries band together to create microeconomies and trade agreements. It's not dumb. It's not weird.
Well, let's talk about the more fun stuff in the news. Not that this isn't fun, but it does get a little dry, and I think that I've come away a little smarter than I was
before.
You're
saying macroeconomics isn't your favorite class, Kevin?
Actually, it is. I wish I'd taken more of them. I tell my kids, I say, take finance, take economics. I don't care what you do in life. That will be the most valuable knowledge you get. But what we love to talk about, just because it's fun, is the Mueller investigation and the Russia probe and what a bad president Donald Trump is. So let's dive into that pool for a little while.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
It really is.
It really is.
Now, you know, the more perfect union does not have a 60-day rule like the Justice Department apparently has, where we're not supposed to raise the specter of new investigations within 60 days. But boy, Rudy Giuliani seems to think that the 60-day rule was one of the Ten Commandments, because he seems to quote that thing more than, you know, thou shalt not kill.
Yeah, they're saying that the Justice Department isn't supposed to announce anything significant within 60 days of the midterms because it shouldn't look like election tampering. But I've got two words, and those words are James Comey.
Yes, James Comey did it, and he shouldn't have. But here's the other thing. Giuliani is misrepresenting the 60-day rule, because he's telling people that they're not supposed to be investigating anything during 60 days.
Is it like with
prior
like
to the
sitting
election.
Shiva for 60 days before they should just be on the floor with the mirrors covered? What are they?
Yeah, that was never the rule. The rule is that you're not supposed to make anything public.
Yeah.
That could affect the election. But he's saying they should close down their investigation because of the 60-day rule, which is absurd. And the other thing that I find funny, and I mentioned this to you guys before the podcast started, you know, Paul Manafort has a second trial that's going to be starting in two, maybe 3 weeks in Virginia, is it?
Yeah.
Or is it in D.C.?
It's in D.C.
This one's in D.C. The first one was in Virginia.
Right, but they were petitioning for a change of venue. It's in their mess.
How do you not make headlines when every single day Manafort, the Ukraine, and Trump is going to be in the news?
Well, that's no longer part of the Justice Department. It's a different system. It's the judiciary, and it's outside the control of investigating bodies like the FBI. So, you know,
Rudy Giuliani will understand that nuance.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, that's nuance is really his thing these days. He's not wielding a sledgehammer at all.
Exactly. He's not a bull in a china shop. The 60-day rule isn't a law. It's kind of a courtesy.
That's right.
There's no place. And even though Eric Holder has written about it, and so has...
Well, it's a good idea. It's a good idea because you don't
want
the
practice.
Justice Department of a sitting administration to feel that they can flex and influence elections. It is an ethical practice, and it's something that should be continued. And it wouldn't bother me if Mueller was mum for 60 days prior to the election, because if it leads to freer and fairer elections, we should all be in favor of it. But the idea that it is somehow sacrosanct and, you know, the most precious idea that we've ever had in American judicial practice is completely absurd.
Right. And at the same time, Trump, I know Kevin hates to talk about Trump tweets, but Trump is upset right now at Sessions because Sessions just indicted the Collins and Hunter, Representative Collins and Representative Hunter.
Yeah, but he only indicted them because they're criminals.
Right. Because they're guilty. Yeah. Right. But these were two very popular Republicans. These were two Republicans who came out to support him early. And he feels like, how could you do this? And he's like, way to go, Jeff. You couldn't have waited. I mean, why are you doing your GD job?
But the best thing is that Duncan Hunter spent campaign funds to fly his bunny in a plane.
Yeah.
And we should just talk about that at every opportunity.
Let's just find people of a crime.
Oh, I know.
First of all, as the Justice Department's Inspector General noted, this 60-day rule, and I'm quoting the IG, is not written or described in any department policy or regulation, unquote. We should also note that it really, as much as everyone likes to talk about it, it really hasn't been followed. I'm old enough to remember when independent counsel Lawrence Walsh indicted just about everybody in the Reagan administration for Iran-Contra 4 days before Election Day 1992.
He only did it because they were guilty.
Yes.
Yeah, sure. Casper Weinberger was guilty for the fair when he opposed the whole thing from the beginning. Right. I believe that. No, I don't. But my point is, while the first trial was mainly about how Manafort kept all his ill-gotten gains from the tax man, the second trial is about how we got those ill-gotten gains in the first place. And Giuliani and Trump et al. Don't want Americans to focus on the fact that Trump's campaign manager for 3 months basically also helped elect a bunch of Putin cronies in the Ukraine. So they're going to throw the 60-day rule around just to make America think that the calendar somehow trumps the facts in front of their face in the second Manafort trial. That's all this is really about.
Well, and I would argue that if they were going to throw the 60-day rule around, they should have started throwing it around the day that this trial went on a calendar, which was months ago. It's not like this is a surprise trial. Everyone's known about it.
Right. And there's going to be a trial, and there's going to be a midterms, and then sometime after the midterms and before the Democrats take control of the House, God willing, Robert Mueller is going to issue a report. It's going to be comprehensive, it's going to be expansive, it's going to be damning, and it's going to be the seeds of investigations in the House and in the Senate that will lead to an impeachment trial. That is my prediction.
Yeah, but Giuliani is already talking about keeping the report in the Justice Department where no one will see it ever again.
Yeah, that's going to go. That's going to go over big. Hey, I'm innocent. There was no collusion. I did nothing wrong. And we're keeping this report from the American people. Yeah, that's going to fly.
Believe me. Yeah. No, we're, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. If that happens, there will be riots. There will be riots in the street. Trust me on that one.
Yeah, DJ, you have called Giuliani a weapon of mass distraction. You are correct.
Yes, I have. I have, and it is. But he is. But the fact of the matter is, whatever happens, straw donations have been illegal for 47 years. This isn't a McCain-Feingold thing. This isn't a Citizen United thing. This is a Campaign Election Act of 1971 thing. All right, it's been illegal since before I was born. I do not want the message to be sent, oh, because he's president of the United States and he did all this other illegal shit, we're just going to let this straw donation thing slide. That is not a message I want to send. I get that more Americans will focus on the Mueller stuff. That's fine. I get that maybe even you get better, more support for impeachment based on whatever Mueller report sends. That's fine. What is not fine to me is saying, we're going to let the straw donation stuff slide. I'm not comfortable with that at all.
So let's talk a little bit about the midterms, because now we are, I think, almost within 60 days or very close to
we're getting the
2018 midterm elections. Got a fascinating race in Florida, the governor's race there, where Andrew Gillum is going up against, I forget the gentleman's name, who's an arch conservative.
Ron DeRacist. DeSantis.
Yeah, I was going to say DeSantis. DeSantis.
You couldn't have two more polar opposites, but who wants to run with this one? It's going to be a fun race to watch.
Let me do this one. So first of all, Andrew Gillum is a far left, pretty progressive guy. He was backed by Bernie Sanders, if I'm correct. Is that right, you guys?
Oh, yeah, our revolution guy?
Yeah, he was.
Rock on.
And no one really expected him to win. And, you know, God bless him, he won.
No one expected him to win.
Okay,
well,
fair enough.
Well, but he was polling in fourth place, I think. It was an upset when he won.
It was without a doubt an upset. But within, like, 24 hours, DeRacist, isn't it?
It's DeRacist. It's delightful. It's right. Lovely.
DeSantis.
I'll get that right eventually.
You comes don't have out, to. DeRacist works. We all know what
it does. Mean. It does. Comes out with this terrible... we call them dog whistle attacks. And he first says, we don't want the state to be monkeyed with. And then he even says, you know, he's a very articulate man. I mean, he speaks very well, you know. It's such a bullshit line. And I love Andrew Gillum's response with he hasn't called him out on it. He's like, you know, I'm hoping that he'll take it back and I'm hoping that he'll speak better. You know, he's very, what's the word I'm looking for?
Cool.
Mature about it. Mature. He's trying to make a statement like, hey, we can work together. We are above this petty crap that this guy threw out there to try to bait me, but I'm not going to take it. And I have nothing but respect for Andrew Gillum. He didn't take the bait. He didn't, you know, he's like, we are moving forward. And he's getting tons of donations. And that's now their attack is, well, obviously he's taking outside money. So obviously he's like, it just never ends with these SOBs. So,
well,
yeah.
He's got outside groups doing incredibly racist robocalls. Like, I don't actually know text of it. But, you know, what I heard was that it was fairly appalling.
Oh, yeah. You know, I don't like to make Florida jokes. But, I mean, gee whiz, Florida, get your shit together. I mean, come on. That alone should make you guys embarrassed. Jeez.
The More Perfect Union. Real debate without the hate, available on iTunes and Stitcher.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know what we haven't done in a while? We haven't done a swing state report, actually.
All right.
And so I have just a little bit of news from my swing district, Not swing state report, swing district report.
Yeah, that's better.
Well, I'm going to talk about a swing state when you're done talking about a swing district.
Okay. So, of course, I'm from CA25, which has a very highly contested race for the House of Representatives between Steve Knight, the sitting Republican, the incumbent Republican, and Katie Hill, who is running on the Democratic side. And I just wanted to tell you guys that Katie Hill is on the airwaves now with some really great campaigns. I'm seeing them on cable news, on CNN, on MSNBC. I haven't seen Steve Knight on the air. And early in the summer, the Hill campaign was warning the workers, the volunteers in her campaign, that Steve Knight was getting money from the Koch brothers and they were going to be blanketing the airwaves. But it turns out it's just the other way around. She's got this great positive campaign message that's being seen by me and I assume by other people in our district. And Knight, you know, is sending out a lot of mailers, but he's kind of radio silent on the airwaves. So that's, I think, a hopeful development. And boy, if we could flip CA25, that would go a long way towards a blue wave in November.
I just want to jump in with talking about Arizona. They just had their primary, and my girl, Kyrsten Sinema, is now officially the Democratic candidate for Senate in Arizona, and that's gettable. It's, you know, she was polling ahead of the nominee Martha McSally on the Republican side in hypothetical polls at the end of July. So she's got good name recognition. She's got good kind of baseline approval from folks. And if we can get Democrats motivated in Arizona, we could have our first incredibly kick-ass, one-time homeless person, social worker, bisexual senator coming from Arizona. And you got to get behind her. She's amazing. She's so cool. Go look up some of her interviews, Kyrsten Sinema. I'm really, really high on her. She's one of the people I would most like to see win.
Right now, Sinema's polling almost 5 points higher.
Oh yeah, than McSally.
Yeah, which is wow. That's amazing. And
that would be great.
And when you said first time bisexual in the Senate, we're going to say first out.
Right, first person, openly bisexual.
Right, that we know.
First that we know of. Yeah, and let's be clear.
Like, but that, I mean, you know, and if you listen to her, she literally never talks about her personal relationship. She talks about the fact that
that's her. That's cool.
Yeah, she doesn't have to. She talks about her experience being homeless with her family for several years, and she talks about, you know, becoming a social worker and getting a PhD and entering the state politics, and then, you know, becoming a member of the House. And I've met her. She's just so cool and approachable and smart, and you can see the wheels turning in her head. She's just one of these people who's always thinking and always putting pieces together. And like I say, I would love to see her take the Senate seat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like she's got a good start at this point.
She does.
Now, I have a question for you guys. As you well know, there's another Senate seat that's open in Arizona. It will be filled by Doug Ducey, who is the sitting Republican governor of Arizona, is up for re-election in November. How come he gets to appoint a senator only 60 days or less before his re-election, but Barack Obama was not allowed to appoint a Supreme Court justice or even nominate a Supreme Court justice that got a confirmation hearing for like 9 months before an election? How come Republicans have two different rules, one for Democrats and one for Republicans? Am I sensing some type of hypocrisy here, or am I just out of it? I don't know.
Well, Steve Ducey is white. I don't know if you've mentioned that part.
Well, obviously, I was just being sarcastic. I mean, but I just wanted to point out the hypocrisy. It's ridiculous that this guy, I don't know why there aren't Democrats in the Senate who aren't raising this issue. Maybe they think it's somehow going to get turned on them as being anti-John McCain or something. But, you know, they should be pointing this out. Why is this man filling a seat 2 months before his own reelection? Maybe a Democrat will win that governorship, and maybe he should appoint the next senator.
You know, I raised this point back in May, and I was not thrilled when John McCain stayed in office past the point of special election to replace him. I don't think setting up a dynastic succession wherein your wife takes your seat at your request of the governor.
I don't think she's going to do it.
I don't think it's going to be her. I don't think it's going to be her. So there's another area that I want to talk about. I want to get away from politics. There's three things that are in the news that have nothing to do with Donald Trump, and I'm actually looking forward to talking about them. One is Colin Kaepernick, has just apparently been named the face for Nike's Just Do It campaign for the 30th anniversary of the Just Do It campaign. And I think that's just grand.
Oh, guys. I want to stand up and cheer. That, you know, this is another one of these instances of corporate America having the pulse of things in a way that politicians don't, in the way that, you know, social activists don't always. They know.
In a way that NFL owners don't.
Well, no. Well, because NFL owners are, a branch of the Republican Party. You know, they get it. They understand the resonance of Colin Kaepernick and what he's been doing. And they are more than willing to salute him and to put him forward as somebody admirable. And I love it.
Well, I think we should also think about there is a giant schism between corporate the kids who buy shoes and then these giant politicians. But, and it's not only race and wage. And I think Nike is smart enough to understand that. And so it's not just this.
No, great, it's a good
ideal
business move too. Yeah.
It's a fabulous business move because Colin, but in the same point, like Rebecca was saying, Colin Kaepernick is standing up for these young African American people who are being traumatized and abused on the streets by police officers, and that's the whole movement.
Yes.
Has nothing to do with the flag.
Yes.
I mean, has nothing to do with the flag.
And it was never about the flag. It was about the national anthem. It was always about the national anthem.
Right, and we should keep that, and we should say that over and over again. Nothing to do with the flag. And Colin Kaepernick is a hero to a lot of these people who will be buying these shoes, okay? And Nike knows where its core audience is. And it's not old white guys who own football teams.
Okay, but I think that the bigger message is sometimes the smart business move is also the right move ethically.
Yes.
And that's nice when that happens, but it's really nice when a company does the right thing, even though it's good for their bottom line. I'm just glad they're doing the right thing regardless.
Well, and it's such an empowering thing to say to young people of color in America that, yes, your concerns matter. Your spokesman matters. You count. We want to sell things to you. We are willing to come to the space you are in to do that. That's a valuable thing. And I remember writing about this a couple years ago when it was either Nike or Adidas was selling sport hijab, like a wicking fabric, non-slip hijab for Muslim athletes. And, you know, it was at a moment where there was a lot of controversy about the place of people who were visibly Muslim in the media. And meanwhile, here's this company going, I'm going to sell you some sporting goods. You are here. You have money in your wallet. You count to me. You matter. And the marketplace is often ahead of politics in recognizing the value of disparate groups.
Now, I'm going to dazzle you guys with maybe the best transition I've ever done. So hold on to your seats because this could send you flying into the sky.
I can't wait. I'm excited. Let me hear it. Sock it to me.
Colin Kaepernick, his initials are CK. And there was another CK in the news this week. Louis CK.
Oh.
Come on. That's a great transition.
Oh, my God, Kevin.
Would have helped if you had pronounced Mr. Kaepernick's name correctly.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I got it wrong the first time. I got it right the second time.
All right, so tell us about Louis C.K.
Well, I think everybody knows that Louis C.K. came back in the news this week. He showed up at a small comedy club in New York City. Actually, he went to two comedy clubs in one night, asked to do a 10-minute set. A lot of people don't understand what happened there. They think the owner of the club had something to do with this. The owner of the club that was in the news, he was home sleeping at the time. But the etiquette in comedy clubs, and I used to be an MC at the Comedy Store and at the Improv. I know this world well. The etiquette is when a celebrity of the stand-up world walks in and says, can I get up and do 10? You put them on. There's no questions asked. And it's part actually of the business of comedy clubs. The unannounced stop by, the surprise guest, is built into that business. People go to comedy clubs not necessarily because some Kevin Kelton or Greg Matusak that's never been on TV is doing a 20-minute set. They're hoping that a Louis C.K. or a Jerry Seinfeld or a Jay Leno or someone else of that ilk is going to be a surprise guest that night. So that's what happened here. Louis C.K. walked into the club. He hadn't been on stage for 9 months since he was outed as having masturbated in front of many women, obviously inappropriate conduct that no one wants to defend. But people are really upset at C.K. for coming back to his trade and at the club for giving him stage time. Now, I know that I'm on his side in this particular thing. I think at some point, you know, you do your penance and then you have to get back into society. But I'm curious to hear what everybody else thinks.
Let's hear from Rebecca.
I don't consent to talk about Louis C.K.
There we go.
I wouldn't consent to watch Louis C.K. I wouldn't consent to work in a club where Louis C.K. was doing stage time. I do not consent to be part of Louis C.K.'s comeback.
Okay.
He did not ask for the consent of the audience. He did not ask for the consent of the staff in that club. He is an admitted sexual predator. He should have asked if it was okay to be there, someone other than the stage manager. I do not consent.
It's not the stage manager, and I just want to correct that because you said that on Facebook.
It was the stage manager. That's what the owner said, that he walked in, he arranged...
It's the MC. It's the MC.
Well, whoever it was, he asked one guy.
Greg, what do you think of this whole kerfuffle?
Well, seeing as he's not a convicted sexual predator, he never went to court.
No, he admitted the behavior. He didn't admit to being a sexual offender. That is a label. He has not been convicted of that. He has not even been charged with that.
One of the aspects of the Me Too movement is, you know, of course, identifying this behavior, labeling it as obviously wrong, making sure that this won't happen again. But then the other question is, what do we do with these gentlemen? Is there rehabilitation? Is this it? Do these people never come out again? Do they ever re-enter society? And I'm not taking, you know, these gentlemen's side, but at some point they have to go to work. They have to leave their house. Does Louis C.K., before he goes into a store, does he have to get permission?
So the question is, who decides what that penance is? Who decides what that consequence is?
Right. And it's not the police.
And what I've been arguing with a lot of people in Open Fire and in other Facebook arenas is none of us can make that decision. And since a court of law has not passed judgment on him, unfortunately, it's really up to a handful of individuals. One is the person himself, in this case, Louis C.K., and the other is the club owner or the producers or the television, you know, network that decides to hire him. And we can complain about it. We can boycott. We can think it's wrong. But we can't stop it.
Nobody in that room was given the opportunity to boycott.
Well, they had the opportunity to get up and leave, which apparently one or two did, and they got their money back. So the idea that they were accosted somehow, I mean, you know, I've been in restaurants where O.J. Simpson showed up. What am I supposed to do? I mean, are the employees, are the waiters and waitresses supposed to walk out because they don't want O.J. Simpson in the restaurant? I assume it could happen, but no, their employees are supposed to do their job.
Well, if you're an employee of that club who is counting on that night's wages to make your fucking rent... Yeah, you just gotta live with the fact that the MC allowed the sexual predators' concerns to take precedence over yours.
No, I'm sorry. They do not get a say in it. I mean, they're employees. So if it's waitresses or waiters or the people working in the ticket booths or anyone else that works there, no, they don't get a say in it. It's up to the employer and the person he decides to employ or not.
They did not get a say in it that night. I suspect they will get more of a say of it in the future. What we are talking about here is a set of... What we're talking about really here is manners. We're talking about how manners work in a comedy club. This incident will ensure that the manners will change and that the manners will evolve. Because for most of America, what Louis C.K. was able to do and what the MC was able to do for him... is not acceptable. So what was the rules or the...
He got a standing ovation. It was acceptable for the 150 people who were sitting there and wanted to see him that night.
But no, is the server supposed to serve him if she's afraid he's going to whip his dick out and start waving it at her?
That is between the server and her employer. And his employer.
Well, the employees of this club were not given the chance to work that out with their employer. Their employer made a unilateral decision without their consent.
Yep.
It comes down to consent.
Well, you know what? Employees have to do a lot of things without consent. And the analogy that I used on Facebook, and maybe you guys will think it's a bad analogy. In fact, DJ, I think you already told me it was a bad analogy, but I'm going to put it out there anyways. Suppose I buy a first-class ticket to fly across country on United Airlines, and I sit down, and Louis C.K. is sitting next to me, okay? Now, I suppose I could get up and say, hey, I want off this plane, I don't want to sit next to this gentleman, or I want another seat. But what happens to the flight attendants? Do they not work that flight because Louis C.K. is on it and it offends them? What if there's a male or a female pilot that has a problem with Louis C.K.? Do they not fly the plane across country? Does United have to ask their permission to put Louis C.K. on that plane before they will do their job and fly 175 other people who paid their tickets across country? It's absurd. Employees don't get that benefit. Listen, Rebecca, we're not disagreeing on Louis C.K. We think what he did was an abomination. I do too. We're disagreeing on how society reacts to people who have not been charged with a crime. And you cannot convince anyone that those flight attendants or those pilots should not fly that plane across country, or that he should be kicked off because it offends the flight attendants.
Okay, how about this one? How about, remember when Sarah Sanders went to that restaurant a couple months ago?
That was the restaurant's choice. Wait.
Just work with me for a moment, right? And she pulled everyone around and they were like, hey, some of us don't feel comfortable with us here. And the restaurant owner said, okay, well, I'm hearing what you say. I think I'll go talk to her. And the restaurant owner said, look, I've talked to my staff. They don't feel comfortable. And she made a choice, right?
Right.
Now, because they felt uncomfortable with her around, with her stances and how she's saying. But if she would have said, hey, you know what? This is your job. Get back in there. If you don't like it, leave.
Or take the night off.
Or take the night off. Either one.
But take the night off without penalty.
This is your job.
You should get paid for the shift.
No. You should get paid for the shift because you got a problem. Because once again.
Well, again, that's to be worked out with the owner of the business and the employees.
Right. That's fine, because we've talked about freedom isn't free. I have no problems with her saying that. And I would have had a problem with that, okay, either way. But, you know what, at certain point, everybody's got to make a living, okay? And at a certain point, Louis C.K. is going to work again, okay? And then he is not going to ask everybody.
And I accept that the market has a place for Louis C.K. in it. But you put him on the freaking bill with 24 hours notice so that everyone in the room is cool with being in a space with Dick Wagon Man.
First of all, he is not. I don't think that is how this works, is that he has to get permission from here
on. It's going to be how it works from now on.
It's not.
No, it's
That's
not.
The point.
No, not. It ain't, DJ.
I am telling you that's how
you
I am
are telling
you.
Me that well, you're wrong.
I am telling you the rules will change. The unwritten rules will be rewritten.
There will be some club owners who will tell MCs, if somebody like that comes in, please run it by me first. There will be others that won't.
And that's how it starts.
There will be others
it starts,
that won't.
It starts with those clubs.
Right. But if you've actually been to if you've been to any comedy clubs, one of the first things they say is, you will be offended as you come in here. Many comedy clubs have that somewhere posted.
Of course.
You will be offended. They tell jokes and they sell, there's signs at a lot of the clubs. There's a sign here at one of the clubs in Ohio that said, look, someone's going to say something to offend you. If you don't like it, please get up and walk out. Okay. And comedy
and
is
everybody
like
who has had an opportunity to read that sign has consented to that circumstance. It comes down to consent. Louis C.K. walked in and performed in front of that audience and that staff without their consent. He ambushed them. He came in and expected a professional courtesy given to the highest echelons of his profession when he is, in fact, a disgrace within his profession. And he has clearly learned nothing about consent and nothing about humility.
All right. I think we might disagree on that one. But
end scene. Okay. So I guess tonight's Real Debate Without the Hate had a little bit of edge in it. So, with that in mind, anything else we want to cover before we wrap things up?
Well, I had a fun... I've been following with some amusement the controversy about naming or renaming or not renaming a Senate office building after Senator McCain. And I was thinking about, well, who would I choose to name a Senate office building after if I had
I'm guessing it's not Louis C.K.
It is not Louis C.K., mostly because he was never a senator. but my choice... when I thought about this, would have been Senator Harkin, who is not dead, so probably doesn't want anything memorializing him quite yet. But yeah. I would like to remember him for his work authoring the Americans with Disabilities Act. And I was wondering what you guys thought about this and, you know, who you'd name a building after and why.
If I go recent, maybe Paul Wellstone.
Oh, yeah, good one.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. And if I go, like, really old, and I'm pretty sure he's got a bunch of stuff, is Senator Clay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Henry Clay. Good yeah, name. Yeah, because, you know, both good Democrats. Henry Clay said...
Henry Clay was a Whig, but...
Oh, yeah, okay, and he said, I'd rather be right than president, or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, and, you know, good, and he hated slavery... And like I said, he's
and he got his wish. He was right more than he was president.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he, although he ran for president several times, but you know, like I said,
The historian Daniel Walker Howard a great line on Henry Clay. Though never president, he was often right, and he would have been right even more often had he wanted to be president.
Yeah. And I'm now realizing Barack Obama used a variation on that quote, talking about the ACA. He's like, I would rather be right and be a one-term president than walk away from this, or something along those lines.
Yeah.
What about you guys?
Yeah. I would say Charles Sumner. You've got any? I would name every building after Charles Sumner. Sumner one, Sumner two.
I was
going to
say
Sumner
that would make
three.
It so confusing trying to get to a meeting.
Probably yeah, would.
You and George Foreman. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, we'll just give one building to Charles Sumner.
I mean, they are all but connected. The Senate buildings have tunnels between them, so they're effectively a complex. Yeah. You could just name it the Sumner Complex.
Yeah, the Sumner Complex. But I would note that just the resistance to renaming the Russell Building, it really says something about how thoroughly screwed up the Republican Party now is, that they refuse to name a Senate building for one of their own who has just passed to preserve a name of a racist Democrat on a Senate building. That's just how thoroughly screwed up the GOP is at this moment.
Well, you know, I'm going to be the person that everybody disagrees with here. I don't understand why they're taking the name off the Russell Building. You know, John McCain, fabulous senator, fabulous American. He had a week's worth of tributes and he deserved every moment of it. But Ted Kennedy was an amazing senator, too. Yeah. Robert Byrd was an amazing senator. And we could probably list a 100 people that are just as worthy of that honor as John McCain. In 1973, I think it was, they made the decision to name that building the Richard Russell Office Building. And, you know, I've read some of the accounts this week of Richard Russell's history. It's easy to focus on the fact that he was a segregationist of some sort.
Okay, there's
but
that.
But I'm sure that's not why they named it after him. He was considered a great senator. And, you know, at a certain point, listen, if the Senate decides that he should no longer be honored with having his name on that building, and they vote to do that, I'm fine with that. I really am. I have no love of Richard Russell. I just wonder why they have to rush to do it the week that John McCain passed. Let a little time go by. And then think about, is he the most deserving person? Maybe it should be the Edward Kennedy Senate building.
This is like what my wife says to me. She goes, yeah, but what have you done for me lately? You know, what has Richard Russell done for me lately? You know?
Yeah.
My wife doesn't say that, by the way. She's
most
awesome.
Of us don't know anything about any of the people that the House and Senate office buildings were named after. I mean, I think there's a case to be made that we could name it after the first woman to ever be elected to Congress. We could name one after Senator Mikulski, who was the longest serving woman in the United States Senate and the first female chair of the Appropriations Committee. That, you know, there are a lot of different people. But, you know, Senator McCain is a legend. And we recognize our legends in this country.
And again, I'm not taking anything away from John McCain. I'm a John McCain fan. But you know what? He had a wonderful week of memorials. Let it rest for a little while. And then, you know, like, if it's too soon to talk about guns after a shooting, it's too soon to talk about renaming office buildings 5 days or 7 days after the man passed away.
Arizona is already named after him by now. I'm sure, like, high schools all over Arizona are now named after Senator McCain, post offices, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's
great, but great. They should be.
Yeah, and the bad news is the rest of them are named after Joe Arpaio.
No.
Yeah.
Kevin, it sounds like you're talking to us like you're talking to your kids trying to get us to rethink a tattoo. Just wait a week or two. If you really like the tattoo, you'll get it.
I am not getting any McCain tattoos. I'm not even getting a Senator Harkin tattoo, just so y'all know.
Well, it would go great with my Wellstone tattoo. So.
We want to thank everybody for listening. Listen, if you're going to get yourself a tattoo, think about this one. Hashtag MPU Podcast. And we'd like you to look for us on Facebook at facebook.com/moreperfectunionpodcast and share our tattoo and our link on your Facebook timeline so your friends can discover us as well. And if you would like to join in our political debate between shows and tell me that I'm wrong there too, please join us on our Facebook group, Open Fire Politics. We are all there during the week and we really would love to see you there too and have great debates with you. Sometimes these things get heated, but it really is real debate without the hate. We all joke about it at the end of the show, and then, of course, we hang up, and then we curse each other out, and then we do this again next week.
Oh, yeah. Rebecca and I are getting Manny Petties tomorrow, so it's cool.
Yeah, totally. I actually need a petty really bad, Greg, so 10:30, does that sound good to you?
Yeah. Heck yeah.
What color are we doing this week?
Bubblegum. Is there another color? Ha 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 ha.